Detroit Beard Collective is a proud sponsor of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
Guys, tired of trying to make that burly beard of yours look and smell good? Then check this out. Straight out of the Motor City, where they know a thing or two about being tough, comes Detroit Beard Collective, specializing in making that facial hair look good with products like beard butter, beard oils and soaps, specialty combs, and so much more. Come check out the line today at DetroitBeardCollective.com. DBC takes pride in using Detroit and Michigan-based companies and ingredients in all aspects of their product development and manufacturing as they continue to build Detroit's premier grooming company. Even burly dudes like to look and smell good, and DBC will make that happen. Do yourself and your badass beard a favor and log on to DetroitBeardCollective.com and check out all the amazing products they offer. And when you're ready to check out, use promo code SJPDBC to receive 10% off. Detroit Beard Collective, cleaning this world up one beard at a time.
Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio with Tim Ellis and Brad Blair as we are quickly heading into one of our favorite times of the year. And, of course, we're talking about fall time and getting closer and closer to Halloween.
Brad. It is the Halloween season. You can feel it in the air.
You bet. And that's why I'm really excited about our guest. And we'll touch on this a little bit more here in the opening segment a little bit later. But our guest coming in today and what we're going to be talking about is really kind of setting the stage for what should be some pretty entertaining viewing for the Halloween season.
I think so. Yeah. Something different, if nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll touch on that. That's a little teaser right there. But welcome back inside the Creaking Door. And it's ramping up to be that busy time for us, Brad. We got the new book out and a lot of speaking engagements coming our way.
A lot of travel starting up shortly. Mm-hmm. In fact, coming up in a couple of days here. Probably already happened by the time anyone hears this. But we have Michigan UFO Contact going on in Houghton Lake, Michigan. Very excited about that. You and I were just talking off air. It's a little bit outside of our comfort zone, which is great. I love delving in and doing the extra research, but we're going to be doing a presentation on all things kind of outside of the realm of normal, outside of ghosts and things, of course, but more towards the UFO, possible extraterrestrial sightings throughout northern Michigan and our home area of the Upper Peninsula.
Yeah, very excited for this. We have a presentation we've done for a few years now, kind of hunting the urban legends in the Great Lakes area, but part of that is UFO. We've never had to dedicate an entire research and an entire presentation on UFOs in our area. And yeah, it's been an absolute blast of researching and learning so much more than I had even known in our area.
Right. And
so,
as you said, this is kind of the kickoff. We're going to be on the road extensively coming up for about the next month and a half. Well, really, even past Halloween. It's looking like we're going to be busy right through November. Right. So we will be keeping you updated on that. Of course, you can get all of our appearances, everything we've got going on our social media sites. Check those out at Creaking Door Paranormal Radio on Facebook and Twitter for the most part. Those are the two that get updated the most.
Yeah, that's right. Facebook, Twitter. We do have a website that is out there, and it still gives basic information for us as well. But please reach out to us and follow along there, too. Hopefully, everyone enjoyed our last episode of Creaking Door, something a little bit different for us. We didn't have to do the interviewing. We got interviewed.
Exactly.
Which was fun.
And that was such a blast coming live from Michigan Paracon 10. Us on stage with our team, the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society. And man, did we have fun with that one.
We did. It was an absolute blast. The whole weekend was a great weekend for us, but finally, for the first time in 10 years, we've put the whole team up there And kind of allowed us to have the spotlight a little bit. We, of course, we just put out the new book.
Right. And Upernatural Haunts.
Yep. And 10 years of doing MI Paracon and over 20 years together as a team. So it was just a fun time to finally just kind of get everyone together for that.
It really was.
Yep. So that's out there right now. If you haven't heard it yet, please do. Go back and check it out. You can find all of our past shows on Google Play, iTunes, coming soon, Spotify, Stitcher, and, of course, at our home base of slackjawpunks.com. Well, with that being said, Brad, let's go ahead and jump right into a little segment we like to call Paranews, where we take a look at some of our favorite headlines we found since our last show and heading into today and things that are just kind of weird and different. I'll start off today. Someone actually drew my attention to this. They tagged me on a Facebook page and then come to find out someone else did it to you as well about these weird cattle mutilations that are happening in Oregon right now. And it's not the first time it's happened. And, of course, the creepiest part of it is the way it's happening. So just outside of Pendleton, Oregon, Terry Anderson is a farmer. And his cattle continue to mess up his irrigation spigots. They do it again and again. And he's out there fixing them and being interviewed for this article. And what's happening right now in remote eastern Oregon, a serial crime spree is unfolding. Young purebred bulls are mysteriously showing up dead. Cowboys recently found several animals with body parts precisely removed. And it's happened just like this before in the West. Anderson, who we were just talking about, back in the 1980s, when one of his ranchers' mother cows was mysteriously killed overnight. From his home place, Anderson pointed to the exact spot where he found her on top of a mountain, and he says, "I've never forgotten it." Anderson said he was just at that exact spot the night before, and then the next morning, the cow was laid over and dead, her udder removed with something razor sharp, and not one drop of blood anywhere, Anderson said. Over 200 miles away, just outside of Princeton, Oregon, Andy Davis is another farmer in the area. And she talks about another cut-up and bloodless cow that was found 2 years ago a mile from her home. A hunter discovered the carcass near water trough just hours after the kill. Her son, who happened to be a butcher at the time, inspected the slain animal, and he couldn't understand how the cuts were made so clean. And she said they went around and they checked, they got on their four-wheelers, they checked the entire area. There was no imprints of any other type of animal tracks, nothing to show what would have brought the animal there, dragged it there, no blood at all. And now it's happening again. And like we said, these young calves now are being shown up dead again, and they have a picture of one. It's actually kind of disturbing, but the innards are removed so cleanly that the body just lays there almost like a loose jacket.
These have always bothered me.
Yeah.
The cattle mutilation, the animal mutilations, it's so creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to go in spurts.
Exactly. Yeah, they kind of in this Oregon area. It happened in the 80s, happened in the early 2000s, and it's happening again.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that and see what happens. So.
Yeah, and I think the creepiness part of it is the fact that there's no blood, nothing. If it was if it was an animal, it would have been destroyed.
Mauled.
Yeah. Exactly. So. Weird stuff.
Amen. So you and I have talked often, and we do discuss often, the age of spiritualism and the old parlor tricks, your old seances, and a lot of the fraudulent activity that happened back in the teens, 20s, even into the 1800s.
Right.
And, well, still alive and well.
Yes, it is.
A Florida woman was recently sentenced to more than 3 years in prison in order to repay $1.6 million.
Wow.
After concocting a fortune-telling fraud scheme in which she convinced a Texas woman that her family was cursed.
Hmm.
Yes. Sherry Tina Iwanowicz, 28, was sentenced to 40 months in prison.
Whoa.
Federal authorities say Iwanowicz met the woman in Houston in 2007 and said she was a psychic/fortune teller. Iwanowicz convinced the woman that a curse had been placed upon her family and it could cause harm to her entire family if not lifted. The defendant claimed she needed large sums of money. That should be your first
right
red flag
there,
right there.
Exactly.
To purchase items such as crystals, candles, and the like, which were needed for meditation work in order to lift the curse.
Oh, God.
Yeah, according to the woman, according to the Houston Chronicle, the woman visited Iwanowicz twice a week, paying her with loans, money earned from stripping.
That just took a turn.
And inheritance funds from her father's death.
Oh, this is disgusting.
Iwanowicz eventually told the woman that the curse originated from her late mother, who had been cursed by a witch in South America.
Oh, well, for sure. Those witches in South America will get you every time.
$1.6 million. That's a lot of dollar bills.
That is a lot of dollar bills. That's a lot of stripping, apparently.
It is.
But so. Man, oh, man. I mean, if nothing else, I'm glad to see that something this fraudulent was busted,
right,
and taken care of. Now, if we could only stop all those paranormal teams that love to run into people's homes and tell them they're
demons.
And your house is infested with them. All right. Well, here's my second story for Paranews. It's not a long story, but I found it very, very interesting. So back in December of 2017, three videos were posted on social media that showed footage taken by what they said were Navy pilots that supposedly showed unidentified flying objects. Of course, everyone came out right away and said, well, if this was the Navy's, they would say something about it. They should never have got, you know, this can't be real. Well, the Navy just came forward and addressed those videos, and they admit they are real. And they feature what they say, quote, they call them unexplained aerial phenomena. Sounds like the PC way of saying UFOs these days. Unexplained aerial phenomena. So I guess that would be a UAP. And on top of that, they say that the video should never have been released to the public. So they're kind of reeling about it now, but at least they're saying, hey, these are our videos. Now, they're not confirming those, that they are definitely alien spacecraft, because they're using the term unexplained aerial phenomena. And the reason being is because they actually have the videos, and we'll post these on our Creaking Door page for sure. It's very interesting. The video is well done, and it shows exactly what you're looking at in the video, and it's got this object in its crosshairs. You can tell the pilot's following it. And at one point, the object stays in a straight pattern, but progresses so quickly that all of a sudden the state-of-the-art equipment can't keep up with it, and it's trying to hone in. Finally, it does again. And then for about another 10, 15 seconds, you just see this object in the crosshairs, and then boom, it jets to the left in a way that no human-made aircraft right now can could even do. The G-force alone would have killed the pilots.
And I've been following some of these stories now, with the Navy releasing more and in the proper ways to disclose what you're saying. It's interesting that the government seems to be opening up a little bit more on the UFO phenomena.
Some of the following, the leading researchers in the UFO, they've been saying probably for a year or two now, they said, be watching out, because they said the age
disclosure
of disclosing
is coming. Yes.
So maybe that's what we're seeing, is little pockets of it leaked here and there. But I don't know. But the video is, now that the Navy has finally come out and said, yes, these are our videos and they never should have been released. When you look at the video, you're like, wow, that's something.
It seems like disclosure may, in fact, be coming soon.
Yeah.
Very soon.
The truth is out there.
You and your wife get into any of the flip or flop, the home renovation shows, that kind of thing?
No, actually, not a lot.
I get forced to watch them from time to time. I'm not a fan, if you couldn't tell, but a new and totally unconventional series called Murder House Flip is coming soon.
Oh, boy.
And it's exactly what it sounds like, a home makeover show that takes on houses where murder happened. Kind of creepy, but also a little bit intriguing. We're thrilled to bring this one-of-a-kind series to life and dive into a world that combines America's two biggest TV obsessions, true crime and home renovation, said Elise Cedar, Senior Vice President of Alternative and Syndicated Programming for Sony Pictures Television.
Okay.
The show, coming from CSI producer Josh Berman, Penny Dreadful producer Chris King, and author Catherine Ramslin, will appear on mobile streaming service Quibi. Quibi?
I'm not sure.
Quibi? Q-U-I-B-I.
I'll go with that.
I'd never heard of it before, but they've got some heavyweights in on this one.
This will
launch in April. So what can viewers expect from the new home improvement show? A colorful cast of forensic specialists, spiritual healers, and high-end renovation experts.
Oh,
it's quite the grouping.
Yeah.
It's quite the grouping, according to the press release. They'll uncover the crimes, shocking secrets, and scandalous history of the homes.
And then we're going to make it look real pretty.
Exactly. And as with all home makeover shows, that's where we're going.
Yeah.
There'll be some gritty hard work involved, although removing bloodstains sounds a little more gruesome than than your typical home renovation task. Hopefully, as with other home renovation shows, the house will feel brighter and fresher in the end.
Oh my.
The projects will bring healing and solace to families living in the aftermath of tragic events by transforming dark places into healthy spaces. So there you go. I might watch this.
It's intriguing, I'll tell you that.
It's a completely new take on the home renovation fad craze that's on HGTV and some of these other networks right now.
Now, I wonder if they purposely are saying, let's wait till April, let's get past the whole Halloween gimmick stuff so that they don't lump us into that, or I'm surprised that they didn't come out for the Halloween season.
I took it from the article, it's still being filmed right now.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to quite be ready in time for the Halloween season, but I bet it finds an audience.
It will. There's no doubt about it. That's a very dark, macabre side of things, and people, I think, will tune in.
I will.
Yeah.
I will at least check out the first episode or two.
First, you got to get Quibi, don't you? Or whatever.
I don't know. We'll look into that, if that's going to be something downloadable or where they're going with that platform.
I'm guessing if they probably have an app that you can get for your smart TV, and then just pay the typical $9.99 a month to rent it. So, well, there you go. That's your stories for Paranews in this episode of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. All right, Brad, we're getting ready to invite someone into the Creaking Door. He has become a very good friend of ours.
Right.
And anyone who listened to our last show when we were interviewed at MI Paracon 10, you know that we were interviewed by Mr. Jeff Belanger.
And what a great subject, because we're coming off of it. Could end up on Quibi.
Very well could.
We're going from the renovation on these murder houses to serial killers.
Yeah.
And their haunts.
Very excited for this one. For a new mini-series that's coming out with Ghost Adventures. And, of course, Jeff is the leading researcher and writer.
Right.
So we're very
excited. He has been since day one on that series. So
that's right.
He's done a lot of work and a lot of background history on this upcoming mini-series, so we'll get his intake on that.
And we also haven't really done a show on serial killers either, and we know that's a big thing. So
no.
Looking forward to it.
We've had Jeff Mudgett on several times, of course.
About Holmes.
Jeff being the great-great-grandson of H.H. Holmes, who just happens to be one of the serial killers being covered in this new series.
Yeah, so very excited to have Jeff Belanger coming inside the Creaking Door. Coming up next, so stick around. That's on the way. This is Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com. Do you love your horror films, comic books, and TV shows served up with a side of what the f***? Then we have the place for you.
Slackjaw Punks!
Yeah, SlackjawPunks.com. We dare you to check them out. A podcast that focuses on all the new horror films, comic books, and TV shows, and interviews with the authors and directors, but covered only the way the guys from
Slackjaw Punks
can do it. Plus, you can enjoy written commentary on all of the new stuff, too, from a whole slew of staff writers. So stop wasting time and check it out.
Slackjaw Punks!
SlackjawPunks.com. Serving it up with a side of what the f***? And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you. And Brad, as we said, the gentleman coming in, he may not admit it, but we call him a friend. We'll see what he says when we open up his microphone.
He might want a debate.
Yeah, for sure. But we're very excited to be welcoming in a gentleman who Brad and I knew of him. Many, many years ago, not trying to make him sound old. I think we're actually older than him, but he's one of our favorite authors in the paranormal field and research. And what we've always loved about Jeff's writing is he tells a very serene subject matter, but can still get humor in it.
And that's hard to do.
It is very
hard. It's very hard to do to add comedy or some form of humor into topics like dealing with death and dealing with the afterlife. And he really melds the two very well.
Yeah, he does. And then we got to know Jeff as we started to bring him in for the Michigan Paranormal Convention. He got some blackmail stuff on us, so we keep bringing him back to keep him hush-hush. And through that, we've become friends with him. Very excited to welcome leading author, one of our favorites. And, of course, he is the leading researcher and writer for the hit TV show Ghost Adventures. Please welcome inside the Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, Mr. Jeff Belanger. Hello. Jeff.
Hello. Yes. Tim and Brad, friends.
Wow. Friends, so exactly.
Yes.
Buddies.
No, buddies. Yeah, good to be back with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you in, sir. It's been a while since we've had you in. We'd have to go back.
Well, not really, because I was hosting your panel, like,
that's
what,
true.
One, two episodes ago?
Actually, just an episode ago. You're right. So, okay,
yeah.
I retract my last statement.
What, a week?
So we did have you in, and again, thank you for that, because we had so much fun doing that. But you interviewed us. I guess what I was trying to say was the last time we had you in to interview you has been a while.
It has.
All right.
So we're excited to have you in. And this time we're going to be talking about the television series that you are involved with. Again, as we said, the leading researcher and writer for Ghost Adventures.
What season are they on now? Like 38, 39?
You know what's funny? Internally, we use certain numbers that I think are not... I think the Travel Channel actually has a... I don't even know. I mean, 17, 18?
Wow.
It's great, right? When I started back in 2008 with episode one, it was just supposed to be 8 episodes. But, man, you guys, the fans caught on and liked it, and it's just been growing and going ever since. So, you know, it was supposed to be 8 episodes. It's now over 200.
That's amazing.
And now we've got this mini series about serial killers, which I don't even know if that counts as like one of the episode numbers. So I can't even keep track.
I
just like to still be working.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone likes to eat and put food on the table. So
yeah, it's a joy.
Before we get into the mini series here, Jeff, take us through how one episode is brought to you. What your job is and how it all comes together, and then eventually at some point the fans get to see it on TV.
Yeah, so everyone's always thinking of a location, right? Sometimes it'll come from Zach. Sometimes the network will make a suggestion. We've got people that are always looking. Fans make suggestions. So once it's been decided where we're going to go, it's handed over to me. And at that point, I get to dig in, which is my favorite part. They just, they're like, here's the location. Here's our main contact. Good luck. And then at that point, I start researching everything I can find on the history, the backstory, not just the building, but the land, the people that have come and gone, the witnesses, what they've experienced specifically, the people that you see interviewed on TV, and then just kind of put it all together. And sometimes we find nuggets that nobody really knew about, and other times we find angles that maybe haven't been quite covered before. And I just kind of put all that into an episode Bible. And give that over to Zach and the guys. So they're kind of armed with what's happened where and when before they get to the location. Mm-hmm. And so that first part of the show that you're watching is really like the historical setup, the interviews with people that have had their experiences, and then once the investigation starts at that point, whatever happens, happens.
Right.
Have you ever had to scrap an episode because you got into the research and found out everything they brought to you or put out in front of you was just complete BS or there just wasn't enough there to go on?
Plenty. Sometimes, you know, I mean, it's crazy, right? Like sometimes there's like internet rumors like, oh, a school bus full of nuns all murdered inside this building. And you're like, wow, I think I would just know that, right? Like, sometimes. So yeah, plenty of times that's happened where, and sometimes it's really unfortunate because I've gone days digging and I'm like, oh man. So it turns out this happened, but not in the building that we're investigating. It happened down the street or this was that, you know, and it gets dropped. That's it. Like, forget it. We're not going. So that's happened plenty. That's the stuff people don't see.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, when it doesn't pan out historically, then that's that.
Yeah, you hit a brick wall and over and done with. So what is, from the moment the location is dropped on your desk to the time the fans see it, what is kind of the time span there?
Well, bare minimum, you're probably looking at like the fastest that would ever happen is like maybe 10 weeks. Which is why I forget when someone's like, oh, this latest episode. I'm like, oh, I'm working on one.
That's, you know, like, right.
Yeah. That was like a season ago. Like, I mean like season of the year, you know, that was spring. It's now late summer. So yeah, you know, it could be 10 weeks, could be a little bit more. But we're filming typically 2 locations a month all the time, like endlessly. Sometimes it's 3, you know, sometimes we'll do back-to-backs or whatever, but there's just an endlessly going machine that's doing that. So an episode that's filming now, depending on where we are in the cycle, may not air until the spring, right? I think now we're actually working on spring episodes. I truly am not sure. All I care about is like the next one.
Right.
That's, I think, how all of us we stay focused on the next location because that's the biggest priority.
Now, do you have a because you are the lead historian and writer for the show, but do you have like a small army with you that helps you with all this?
No, there's one person that helps with locations now. In the beginning, it was just me for that, too.
Wow.
And I'm very grateful to have her help. Her name's Brittany. And so she's now constantly looking for locations and throwing notes out to the crew and saying, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? Which helps tremendously because there's at any time where there's like 20 or 30 that could be in the discussion about where we could possibly go. And then it comes down to, you know, a group makes a decision and they're like, all right, Jeff, this is it. And then I take over.
And then you're
off
and running.
Yeah, that's just, it's really, that's it.
Uh-oh. So whose idea was the serial killer aspect? Is this something that came out of your mind or is this something the guys on the show wanted to do?
That was Zach. Zach really wanted to, you know, we've done locations in the past that have some ties to various serial killers. But he wanted to really dig in specifically on serial killer sites because I think they're so – because it's not just the haunting, right? It's not just the haunted location, but it's the – how do these people think? Because they are different than the rest of us.
I mean,
not Brad, but the rest of us, right?
Right.
They just are, and they're names are household names, which is unfortunate because mm-hmm. they're household names because of truly horrific things that they've done. And so I think he wanted to dig in on that and look for haunts that had those ties. So, but this really came from Zach.
So it's a 5-part miniseries that's going to kick off on...
Four-part
miniseries that begins Saturday, October 5th. That's where I got the 5 from in my head. October 5th.
Yep.
Sorry. So it's a 4-part miniseries, and you've picked four, some pretty big names, as you said, household names. The first one that's going to kick it off is one that Brad and I are very familiar with as well. We haven't done a lot of shows on serial killers, but the one we have is on H.H. Holmes because of his great-great-grandson, who we've gotten to know, Jeff Mudgett, and we've had Jeff in the Creaking Door a couple times. So let's start with that, Jeff, then, and let's bring us into your research on Holmes.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm ruining the surprise. I probably am, but your good friend Jeff Mudgett, you might just see him on the episode. I'm just saying.
He's been pretty excited about that on Facebook.
He's not camera
shy.
All
right, so he's been, yes. Well, I never know what I'm allowed to say or not say. I'm probably going to get in trouble for this whole episode. But so H.H. Holmes, of course, the Devil in the White City, this prolific serial killer that might have, you know, killed 27 people, might have killed 200, mm-hmm. but at least 27, which is, you know, quite a lot. And the location we're doing is in Irvington, Indiana. And this one is special for a number of reasons. One, it's still standing as opposed to, you know, his murder castle in Chicago. This home in Irvington, Indiana, it's still standing. And this place, this house, this was his undoing. And that is the significance of it.
All right.
Howard Peitzel was a little boy who had been abducted and was found murdered inside this house. And this was the case. This is where Holmes started getting sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
And Detective Frank Geyer followed the trail, tracked him down, and this is where he started making the connections. And I think that's why this place is so significant.
So is there a legend about this house being haunted? Or
oh,
is this
yeah.
just
so,
a tie to Holmes?
No, it's a private home. I mean, the body was stuffed in like the stovepipe in the basement. Mm-hmm. Like some kids found it. It was late in the afternoon when the Detective Geyer was kind of closing in on this house, saying he knew Holmes had rented it. He knew Holmes had been seen with some children that matched the description of some kids that were abducted. And so he had tracked it, and then it was kind of late in the day, and he's like, well, I'll look tomorrow when there's daylight, and some kids went in, and they actually were the first to find the bones. Really horrific stuff. And so, yeah, no, the house is active. It's a private home now, and the homeowners let us in and talked about some of the things they're experiencing. It's like, you know, it's funny because we celebrate the serial killers so much. We know H.H. Holmes, but we don't celebrate or talk about the victims. And I almost feel like a haunting in a way is them crying out for like, hey, you know him from murder? How about knowing me? I was a kid with my whole life in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's almost this sense of like, it's important that we explore this. And it's also likely that there's body parts buried to this day on that property. They were never totally found.
I remember that, hearing about that, that there was talk about wanting to try to excavate some of the grounds or something at some point.
Yeah, and it's, you know, okay, if we could speak in practical terms here, the problem when you find human bones on your property that you believe date back 100 years or more is you have to call the police. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. And the police come and they have to treat it like a crime scene because they don't know from looking at it whether it was a few weeks ago or a century ago. And if you're a private home or if you're a business, it can shut you down.
You bet.
And so that's the tricky thing when you start doing these kind of excavations. This is a private home, so you know, I guess it would be their choice if they wanted to do something like that. But I think it's a shame our culture celebrates the killers more than we talk about the victims, right? Like what could have been. And maybe that's the part that haunts us, right? Like the... like that this young kid had his whole life in front of him. Mm-hmm. And because H.H. Holmes was greedy and it was about money and it was about, you know, an extortion thing, he killed the kid. He was inconsequential to him, but he was the whole world to someone. And
so
Holmes
true.
Himself, he said, right, I was born with the devil in me. Couldn't mm-hmm. help the fact I was a murderer. No more than a poet can help the inspiration to sing. That's
yeah.
sick.
Yeah, it is. It's a man who had no soul, and there's no doubt about it. And so very much looking forward to this, again, because, you know, kind of feeling close to the story of Holmes, and so really glad this is what's kicking off the miniseries. But now you move on. One of the names you gave us, Jeff, that is going to be covered is a name that both Brad and I were saying before we started this episode. We've never heard of Jake Bird.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. Before I had worked on this, I hadn't either. And then when I was done working on it, I said, my goodness, this is a name you should have heard of. And this is where we're going to get into kind of a touchy subject, as if it couldn't be more touchy than murdering people in the first place. Jake Bird was born in 1901 in Louisiana, and someone once asked him where specifically, and he basically said somewhere in Louisiana where there's no post office, and that's all you need to know. And by age 19, he kind of hit the road and lived the life of a transient, and he would work on railroads, he worked manual labor, wherever he could find work, and he was always moving around the country. So we're not sure exactly how many people he had killed. We think the number is probably around 44, wow. but it could be significantly higher. And that's just a staggering number. The reason this is touchy is because Jake Bird is African American. And we don't, when you think of serial killers, right? Come on. What are you thinking?
Right.
Describe them.
Middle-aged white men.
Mm-hmm.
Middle-aged white men, 30, 40, right? Middle-aged white men, again and again and again. So I spoke to this author who had written a book on black serial killers. He's an African-American man as well. And this is like the ultimate form of racism. Serial killers, all serial killers, by the way, the reason they get away with it for so long is for a number of reasons. One, they don't really have a connection to their victim. And so that's really hard for police to track. When you have no motive other than you fit someone I would like to kill, that's really hard for police to track. But number two, serial killers have to be able to blend in. That's why white serial killers typically kill white people. Black serial killers tend to kill black people. Jake Bird kind of bucked the mold on that a little bit, though he did kill some African American people as well. So you blend in because that's what you do. Like if you're in a all African American neighborhood and you're a white middle-aged white guy, everyone is going to remember seeing you. And likewise, if you're a middle-aged black man in an all white neighborhood, they're going to remember seeing you. And that was the undoing of Jake Bird in Tacoma, Washington. So this guy is on this spree. And the reason the first time he got caught anyway, it was November of 1928. He's in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and he goes into the home of a white couple, the Stribling, Mr. and Mrs. Harold Stribling, and he hacks them both with an axe. But they don't die. They were able to survive and eventually identify him, and that's how he ended up in Squirrel Cage Jail. And Squirrel Cage Jail is this funky jail. It's a rotating jail cell. So like, you know, basically there's only one way in and one way out for every single cell in the facility, and it rotates. And so you would open the door, bring someone up to their cell, rotate it, and it's everybody's locked in.
Wow.
But what some of the prisoners would do inside this jail is so nasty. When it's rotating, they would sometimes stick their arms out of the jail cell door or window in order to have it broken by the mechanism.
Oh, man.
Because they knew their arm would snap, they would get taken out, brought to the medical facility where they could try to escape. So just, you know, this place is just amazing.
A jail named Squirrel Cage Jail doesn't seem too intimidating in the first place. But then when you start telling that, that's kind of a creepy setup.
Yeah.
Totally creepy. So he did some time there, Jake Bird did, and then eventually was let out because, you know, he didn't murder these people. He tried to, sure tried to, but he didn't. And then he continued on his killing spree and then murdered a white woman and her daughter. And was caught because he just stuck out, which is not how serial killers are typically more smart and calculated, and they know how to blend in, and he was not blending in there by the end. But that's also how a lot of serial killers get caught, is they get sloppy. By the end, they've got this God complex, and they think, I can do whatever I want. I can take lives, and I think that's probably why they do eventually get sloppy. Or maybe there's just like this 1 ounce of humanity in them that knows what you're doing is really wrong, and please get sloppy so we can get caught, because I want to get caught. I want to stop. I don't want to do this. That 1 ounce of humanity almost forces them to do these horrible things. I don't know. But it's truly terrible. So this is a guy, I think, because he's African American, and because we're talking about, you know, the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, he's invisible to mainstream society, even though he was more prolific of a serial killer than people you know by name. And that's really comes down to the ultimate form of racism, really, right? Like, he's not good enough to be talked about with these other names. And so I think it's important. He's not the only, you know, black serial killer. There's others, but we ignore them. And that's kind of a crime of our society. I think we have to include them in the discussion. So I was pretty psyched after this, doing this, realizing, like, this is important for, like, race discussion.
You bet.
You know, if haunting and serial killers, like, this is a guy you should know.
That's a great point. I got to believe then you were like a kid in a candy store, just learning, like feeding off this.
Did you find any specific literature, any books that are dedicated to just Jake Bird and his killing spree?
No, I did speak to this one author who he'd written a book about, like I said, black serial killers. And he's the one that brought up, he said, look, because white society doesn't care if 10 black people go get murdered in an inner city. Like, it's just whatever, just another black person that's dead. And it's a complete tragedy when it could be the same person doing all the killing. Because serial killers are serial killers. Mm-hmm. They exist in all kinds of societies, but we only pay attention to these white middle-aged men. And that's wrong. Now, there's a lot more out there.
Two things on him, Jeff. One, in your research, did you find out, you know, obviously Holmes had his famous quote, I was born with the devil in me, but did you find out what Jake attributed his
evil
for? And two, you had mentioned an axe. Was that his kind of his modus operandi? Did he use an axe in everything?
Yeah, he was known to bludgeon people, which is a pretty brutal way to kill someone. What makes this guy, he didn't have a lot of famous quotes. However, there is the curse of Jake Bird.
Oh.
And that's pretty interesting because he had said at his sentencing, he had said something to the effect of, like, all the people that found him guilty, you're going to die before me. And the crazy thing was, there were 6 people related to the trial where I think 5 of them did indeed die before Jake Bird was executed for you know, capital crime. And so it was really uncanny. And all the newspapers were putting up articles about this Jake Bird curse. Mm-hmm. You know, once it started happening, you know, one person died and then another and then another. And, you know, one was a heart attack, one was something else. So the Superior Court judge died before him, the undersheriff died, the court reporter died. You know, it was really weird.
Wasn't there something similar with Holmes?
Yeah,
wasn't
Holmes
there
had
Holmes
a curse,
curse
too.
where people associated with the trial were after he'd been put to death, I believe, but they all kind of started dying shortly thereafter?
Yeah, I did hear something about that. And I think what happens, right, is that when you've got something truly evil, we can't help but look for connection. Mm-hmm. We can't help but piece one thing to another, to another, to another. And but Jake Bird was specifically quoted in the papers as saying, "I'm putting the Jake Bird hex on all of you who had anything to do with being punished. Mark my words, mm-hmm. you'll die before I do."
Wow.
And then, you know, the paper's like, yeah, whatever. And then, you know, once the Superior Court judge died, he was 69 years old, but he died, you mm-hmm. know, and then the undersheriff was 46, and the Tacoma Police Detective Lieutenant was 46. And so it's just weird that people are going, and suddenly people start saying, it's the hex. It's real. It's for real.
And I'm sure that headline sells papers.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that is part of it, sure. But, so you look for any kind of connection. The other thing that happens, too, especially with serial killers, especially like Bird, is he kept himself alive in jail for like a whole other year because he was just confessing to any murder that anyone wanted to, you know, pin on him. Because at that point, he knew he was going to get executed. And in some cases, this is where, you know, his official count was 11 bodies, but some people believe 44 is a more solid number because he kept confessing. And if you were a detective in any town USA and you had loose ends, you could go pin it on this guy and be like, oh, case closed. Don't worry, people. The killer's not walking among us anymore. Mm-hmm. In some cases, he knew whatever the paper said. But in several others, he knew details that were never in the paper, never anywhere else. And the detective said, I really think this guy did it. He mm-hmm. just knew way too much about the crime. And in other cases, he became a scapegoat. But he definitely killed at least 11.
Wow. Jake Bird. All right. A new name that we just, us and all of our listeners just learned about today, if you didn't know anything about him. So Jeff Belanger's our guest right now inside Creaking Door, leading author and lead researcher and writer for Ghost Adventures. They have a brand new miniseries coming out in October, a 4-part series based on serial killers and the possible hauntings that are related to them. We've already talked about H.H. Holmes, Jake Bird. Jeff, let's move on. The next two are two very well-known names.
Kind of modern-day boogeyman, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's jump into Ted Bundy.
Yeah, so Ted Bundy is, he's so intriguing because this guy is like, he's a chameleon, which is funny because he's a really good-looking guy. You know, but he was able to always change his look. He's the kind of guy that could put on glasses and look very different. He could grow his hair out a little bit or grow facial hair and look like a different person. And I think that's why he was so successful. Plus, he was just so damn charming. And he went to law school. And he was smart. And he knew how the system worked. And so he's hunting and killing, you know, all throughout. You know, the area we focused on in this one, by the way, is a town called Bountiful, Utah, which is the Anson Call House. Anson Call was one of the early Mormon settlers in the area, and this was a home tied to him.
Okay.
It's believed that Ted Bundy had ties to this house because one of his victims was just like 500 feet away, Deborah Kent from the high school parking lot that was just 500 feet from this house. You could walk to it. And Deborah Kent was abducted November 8th, 1974, and was not the first person that day. He had attempted to abduct someone else in Salt Lake City. It didn't go well. The girl got away. And so he was drinking, and he was mad and fired up, and he went down and got into this parking lot and found this girl, got him back to his car, and then, of course, she's never seen again. And this is just, you know, one of these tragedies. Ted Bundy was also baptized in the Mormon Church in Salt Lake City, although he would later be excommunicated for things he did. But he did that. I don't think he cared about Mormonism whatsoever. I think he did it to kind of further blend in that community. You know, he was hunting in and around Salt Lake City. And the crazy thing is, so, you know, I talked to, one of the attorneys that worked on the case, and he said, oh, my secretary was dating him.
Like, oh, wow.
Like, he's just, even when there's these accusations, he's so charming that women were like, oh, no, you couldn't do that. Not a guy like this, right? Like, so even when there's these horrible accusations, women still were able to look past it and date him.
Well, you know what I found really interesting, Jeff, just as the way you were explaining Ted Bundy is exactly the way that a lot of things that are written about H.H. Holmes were said too. Educated, schooled, smart, debonair, good looking, and women fell for him. And the very same thing was said for Holmes.
And I guess that's part of it, right, is that you have to have some sort of God complex, and that God complex has to start with you're naturally good-looking, you recognize it, you're charming, you can blend in, people think like, no, not him. Criminals aren't good-looking guys. They're horrible monsters. And to me, that makes you twice the monster, right, that you're supposed to be some good-looking guy that just blends in. Evil doesn't do you the favor of wearing horns and a big red cape and carrying a pitchfork, right? That's too easy. Mm-hmm. We know to avoid that guy. It's this one that you don't. And he would do things like, you know, he'd wear like a cast on his hand or something and say, I'm so sorry. Can you please help me open my car? My hand is broken. People would take pity and say, of course, let me help you. I would be glad to. And the next thing you know, they're getting whacked in the head. They're getting shoved in the trunk. And they're not seen again. And so, you know, this guy is just bad news. And the house, the Anson Call House, we got to speak with the family that lived in there for the longest time, and they all had ghost experiences. Ooh. It was really something. And so, you can't help again making connections, right? Whether it's after Jake Bird died and making connections to his curse, or making connections to the buildings that are close by where abductions happened. We just can't help but do it. We think about the darkest, worst thing that happened, and in this case, it was Ted Bundy.
So what was the final body count that was attributed to Bundy?
Oh, God, what was Bundy's body count? And this is a guy, too, who they're pretty sure it's higher. I mean, because once he was on death row, he was also admitting to whatever. But I think he confessed to killing 28. But some believe the real number could be way higher than that, maybe even over 100.
Wow. It almost seems like once they're in jail and they know they're going to die, they want to make sure they get credit for everything.
Well, that's part of it, right? So part of it is like, well, you know, the ultimate ego, like, oh, yeah, you only caught me for like four of them, but I really did all this other stuff. And then the other part of it, in Jake Bird's case specifically, is I can keep myself alive and in the news by just, you know, admitting to more and more crimes, just trickling it out. And eventually, well, in Jake Bird's case, they just got sick of it and said, well, we're just going to execute you.
Enough's enough.
So, yeah, but I think Ted Bundy, you know, it was only in the very end when he was, you know, days away from his execution in Florida, was he, like, really spilling the beans about the details where to the point where people said, you know, oh, yeah, no, he's real. And it was Bundy. I was right there days before his execution that he had said where they could find the remains of Deborah Kent. And they did indeed go find, I guess, some bone fragments that were hers.
Wow.
So at least the family got that. I mean, it's very small solace, but at least they did find some remains that they could bury.
Right.
Yeah. The last killer on the list, definitely, I would say the creepiest. This guy just I've read enough on him. John Wayne Gacy scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, well, the clown thing helps a lot, doesn't it?
Right.
I mean, Pennywise and like you just this clown thing is really takes it to a whole other level. Gacy was not overly charismatic or good looking, but he was definitely he was charming. I spoke to his psychologist who dealt with him when he was in the Illinois prison system, like the whole time. And she said, no, he could get you to do anything. He was just so charming. Not really good looking, but charming.
Wow.
And so this guy, he specifically went after young men. So he was dealing with some homosexuality issues. But homosexuality doesn't make you murder people. But he was like a closeted homosexual. So he was dealing with that, had a really horrible childhood. I guess was sort of doomed from the start if you look back on it. But the thing that makes him different from some of the other serial killers is that once he would try to lure the victims to his house, whatever way he could, whether it was food or alcohol or just come hang out. And once he got them there, and once he killed them, he kept them there. I mean, he buried them underneath the crawl space of his house. 26 people were eventually, boys, 26 boys were eventually found underneath. He killed ultimately 33. I guess the rest he had thrown off a bridge into the river. So, but 26 bodies in his crawl space. And like that just wouldn't even occur to people. Like, right, if you murdered someone, you'd want to be far, far away from the body, you'd think. But that's not how a serial killer thinks. a serial killer almost knows. Like, that's so ludicrous. Who would do it? And the fact that he would sometimes dress up in his clown outfit before he would murder someone, God, it's creepy.
Yeah. So, you know, Jeff, just the little bit, the half hour we've spent with you here now talking about these serial killers, you really kind of get, you're talking about all this death and how evil these people are, and you kind of get this heavy foreboding feeling. How about for you, for someone who's, you got to jump right into this, and you've got to research these guys to no ends. Is there a point in your research where you're like, okay, I got to back away a little bit. This has come heavy stuff.
This was bad. Like, There's some episodes of Ghost Adventures where I'm like, I need to, like, go, like, color rainbows and unicorns, right? Like, but this was an intense few weeks of just spending time in the heads of serial killers and pouring through newspaper articles and learning everything I can about how they do things and where they did it and what happened in the locations where we're investigating. And it was awful. I mean, it was really, you know, I was telling my family, I'm like, I need something to just counteract this. And thankfully there was an end to it. You know, there was an end date and then I was finished and I turned it in. I was glad to be done with this one because this is just the absolute worst of humanity. Like, this is the worst thing a person can be. And we did it times four.
Yeah.
So I know it affected everyone on the crew. It affected Zach. I mean, it just puts you to a really dark place because if you're going to go there, you got to go there. And this was a tough one, and I'm glad to be out of the research phase on this one. I'm very curious to see how the investigations went, which I'll find out with the rest of you on Saturday nights in October.
Yes,
Ghost Adventures: Serial Killer Spirits, debuting October 5th on Travel Channel. Jeff, what else do you have going on? Any new big projects on the horizon?
What's that?
Any new big projects on the horizon?
Well, my fall story tour is going to be in full swing. I'll be somewhere pretty much every night of October, and that's awesome. And my weekly podcast, New England Legends, is still coming out. Just these short produced stories of strange tales, whether it's monsters or ghosts or strange history. That's coming out every week wherever you get your podcasts. And also, a new episode of the New England Legends TV series is going to come out.
Oh, nice!
In like 3 weeks, and that'll be available on Amazon Prime. If you're a Prime member, it's totally free. Just look for New England Legends. The first six episodes are already up, and number seven is coming in the next few weeks.
I happen to be a Prime member. I am going to go check that out. And by the way, Jeff, I want to congratulate. I know I have before, but with an attracted audience right now, I want to congratulate you on your New England Legends podcast. They are so well done. They're like 20-minute short story ghost stories, legends. They're fun. They're entertaining. They're informative. You guys do a great job with that.
Well, thank you. We just got nominated for a People's Choice Podcast Award.
Nice.
We'll find out on September 30th whether we won or not. But it's it was cool to just be nominated for that. And we've had over 1 million downloads and 109. It's been 109 weeks in a row that we've put out a new story.
Wow!
Wow!
Nice job. Without missing. So it was a challenge, and I love doing it. So
at what point do you just start making stuff up just to put new stories out?
You know what's awesome is that we've kind of built this audience, right? And so now, I mean, every other day I get an email or a message on social media or something that says, "Hey, have you heard about like the mad trucker of Copacut Road?" And I'm like, I have a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet now where I'm just putting like the location, the story name. I've got the next 30 planned out thanks to just people that listen and are telling me stories I've never heard before. But then you start looking into it and you go, oh yeah, that's gold.
I was just listening to one the other day at my desk and it was really cool. It was the one about the apple tree that ate the founder of Rhode Island.
Who knew that?
Yeah, it's such a kooky story, but it was fun.
And it's true. Yeah. I've seen the root. It's on display in Providence. I went down there. I took a selfie with it. Like, an apple tree ate the founder of Rhode Island. It's not a made-up story. The tree root is on display in the Historical Society. Like, it's in all the papers. It's crazy. And the story behind it is just so cool how it happened. And, you know, Roger Williams, there he was, eaten by an apple tree. But even better than that is one of the newspapers from 1860 had speculated, you know, this apple tree, there was plenty of nearby houses, marauding boys that come through and grab an apple. And they asked the question, how many people have eaten Roger Williams.
Yeah, it's so much fun to listen to. So check it out. You can find everything about Jeff at his website, jeffbelanger.com. It's all on there. And check out what this guy does, because obviously he's done how many podcasts in a row? He's writing for Ghost Adventures. He has these lecture series. Do you ever sleep? Dude,
not in October. In January, I sleep all the way to February.
There you go. That's why you're so good looking. You get a lot of rest.
Thanks.
All right. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. Have a wonderful fall and Halloween season. It's busy for all of us who are in this field. So have a great time, and we will chat soon, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, there we go. Jeff Belanger, lead researcher and writer for Ghost Adventures. He's an author. He's a podcaster. He does it all. Again, check him out at jeffbelanger.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more on the way with Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by slackjawpunks.com.
Guys, tired of trying to make that burly beard of yours look and smell good? Then check this out. Straight out of the Motor City, where they know a thing or two about being tough, comes Detroit Beard Collective, specializing in making that facial hair look good with products like beard butter, beard oils and soaps, specialty combs, and so much more. Come check out the line today at DetroitBeardCollective.com. DBC takes pride in using Detroit and Michigan-based companies and ingredients in all aspects of their product development and manufacturing as they continue to build Detroit's premier grooming company. Even burly dudes like to look and smell good, and DBC will make that happen. Do yourself and your badass beard a favor and log on to DetroitBeardCollective.com and check out all the amazing products they offer. And when you're ready to check out, use promo code SJPDBC to receive 10% off. Detroit Beard Collective, cleaning this world up one beard at a time.
Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio with Tim Ellis and Brad Blair. And what a wonderful time that was to just kind of sit back and chat with Jeff, Brad, and hear some of that dark, heavy stuff.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I can't imagine having to wrap yourself into that as a full-time job.
Yeah.
And as Jeff said, you know, he's spending weeks on each episode of this.
Yeah.
So he was just, I don't know that I could do that. It's so dark. How do you do that and not go to bed depressed at night?
Depressed and dreams and just feeling like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beer. Yes.
Beer helps everything.
Yes, it does.
I am looking forward to this. And,
me
and,
too.
You know, I don't watch a lot of the ghost shows, right. And they've gotten, you know, you and I have talked about it plenty, but I really want to see this, especially after talking to Jeff now.
Yep.
This four-part miniseries, again, October 5th. Starts airing every Saturday in the month of October.
Yeah, especially the historical research that Jeff does. He's so good at his job. I'm really interested
really
in these
is.
As well, so I'll be tuning in for sure. All right, let's go ahead and turn our attention quickly here to Mailbag before we got to lock up the door for another episode. And, of course, Mailbag, you can email, you can reach out to us on Facebook, on Twitter, to our website, and you can share or ask anything. We love it when people share stories that they want to relate, ghost stories or whatever, but you can reach out to us anytime and submit for Mailbag. This one comes from actually someone not too far down the road. I think this might be the closest person we've had, Traverse City, Michigan, Stephanie.
Cool.
Yeah. She says, "Hey guys, love the show. My roommate turned me on to it last Halloween and so glad you're back with new shows. My question isn't a serious one. It's actually kind of silly. So if you don't pick it, I promise my feelings won't be hurt. But you two often speak of your younger years and how much you love Halloween. I can say my childhood was very much the same with wonderful memories of Halloween. I was just wondering if you have any favorite memories or stories of the holiday and would like to share. Thank you for taking time to read this, and please keep up the wonderful work with the show. Your fan, Stephanie." Well, Stephanie,
thanks, Stephanie.
We appreciate that. And a great question.
It is.
Yeah.
It
fun
is.
Question.
I you know, for me, Halloween was always that special time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with anybody that grows up heavily into the paranormal and into the ghosts, Bigfoot, UFO, cryptids, whatnot.
Right.
That was always that one time a year that you could really act out the way you really wanted to be.
Right.
And I mean, memory-wise, as a child, it's the cheap plastic masks and costumes.
And the smell of them.
In the smell. Oh, I can still smell that.
Toxic.
I can still smell that with the cheap elastic strap across the back. I can remember C-3PO. I remember Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Yep.
Those were always what Mom bought for myself and my siblings when we were kids to go trick-or-treating. And getting older, I guess, is when Halloween really starts to ingrain itself. And when we were doing, it wasn't Halloween, I guess, but the night before Devil's Night.
Oh, that memory.
When we started going around to abandoned houses, old graveyards with the Ouija boards, and that's really kind of the catalyst that led to what we do now as paranormal researchers. That really took us a step up.
Yeah, you bet.
Because, again, back then, there were no ghost adventures, ghost hunters. There was no presence in popular media of the paranormal.
So if we wanted to watch paranormal shows or see the interviews with the Warrens or, you know,
Hans Holzer was on a lot back then.
It was around
then,
that time.
Right. That was the only time of year.
Yeah. It's funny you brought up the smell or the cheap. We would go to Walmart, Woolworths here,
right,
and buy them. And I remember as a kid walking down the aisle, and they just have shelves of all these boxes, and the smell of them. I can still smell that cheap plastic, but I loved it
nostalgia.
As a kid. Nostalgia, Tim. Back in those days, too, living up here in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, quite often Halloween was with a winter jacket or snowsuit on.
Right.
With your mask, you know.
And your costume under that.
Yep. For me, the one thing that really sticks out, though, upon those two that Brad was saying, I always had my Aunt Helen, her birthday was in Halloween. So my family every year, she never married. She was a single lady and she was my mom's sister. So every year my mom would throw the birthday party for her on Halloween. And the tradition became tacos for dinner and Aunt Helen's birthday party. So it was always even a little bit bigger celebration for us because we always had the party and the family over at the house. I would run out and go trick-or-treating and come back. And so there's always kind of that party celebration around Halloween for us too. I was convinced when I was a younger kid my aunt was a witch because she was born on Halloween.
Makes sense.
Right. But she was an absolute sweetheart. I don't mean it in that aspect. But those are great memories that I remember having with those parties. And to this day, our family still has tacos every Halloween in honor of. So great memories as being kids and growing up in Halloween and loving that time of year. So good stuff. Great question, Stephanie. Not silly at all. We loved it. So we appreciate it. Again, you can send us anything for our mailbag segment on Creaking Door. Just reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter, Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. CreakingDoorParanormal.com is the website. And Bradley, where else can you find us? Where can people listen to us?
Oh, you can catch us at iTunes. You can download the podcast at Stitcher. We're on Google Play. And, of course, our home base, SlackJawPunks.com, Motor City, Detroit, Michigan.
That's it. So, once again, we want to thank everyone for tuning in and allowing us to do what we love to do. And thank you, Jeff Belanger, for coming in to this episode of Creaking Door. On behalf of our engineers, Brad Blair, my co-host, and myself, Tim Ellis, thank you for coming on in. This is another episode of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
The Creaking Door.